Hello everyone, welcome again to the Associate Affiliate Cricket Podcast. It's quite a big show this week. We have a number of reviews of the ACC Women's Premier Tournament, the Under-19 World Cup, Ireland's tour of the West Indies, and some previews of both the Asia Cup and World Cricket League Division 5. And joining me to do so will be Andrew Nixon. Hello, Andrew.
Hi, Russ. Hi, everybody.
Andrew, let's start with the ACC Women's Premier Tournament. It was a 40-over tournament, which is a bit longer than I think they normally play. Once again, Thailand came out on top of the six teams that were there. They were at home, but it looked like a pretty good performance from them.
Definitely a longer tournament than normal. It's normally either a 25 or a 30-over tournament. And I think that showed in some of the performances. It was very rare that a team actually batted out of the 40 overs, and if they did, they tended to make quite a low score. Obviously not used to this length of game. But Thailand, clearly the best side, and China, clearly the second-best side. I think that's what people expected going into the tournament. And these two teams do seem to be far and above the other women's teams in Asia.
Yeah, Hong Kong did reasonably. They've got a couple of players there that seem to have come out of the Australian system. One thing I did notice is that, especially for the top sides, there were fewer wides being bowled, I think, perhaps not some of the other sides, which might be a good barometer of some improvement being made.
I think we've spoken before on this podcast about the time the ACC put out a press release about a women's tournament saying that the team that bowls the fewest wides will win the tournament. You know, that probably still is the case, but there's less wides being bowled, certainly by the top teams. The lower ranked teams, the Bhutan and Iran, do still bowl a lot of wides. You're looking at, in some matches, 40, 50 extras, which you shouldn't really be doing in a 40-over game.
And from this tournament, it doesn't seem to have qualified Thailand for anything. Perhaps it might be the Women's World Cup qualifier, but other than that, it's just an Asian tournament, but it's still good for them to obviously get some cricket in.
Yeah, I think the only outcome from this tournament would be that Iran will now be relegated to the next division down, which I think is rather confusingly called the Elite Division. I think the Elite Division comes below the Premier Division. So, yeah, but good experience for all the teams, playing, as we say, a longer form of cricket. Hopefully more women's cricket in Asia can only be a good thing. Hopefully we'll start seeing some of the traditionally strong Asian men's teams coming through in women's cricket. It's, with the exception of Hong Kong and Nepal, you see a very different lineup at the top. You know, there's no Afghanistan, obviously there's some cultural reasons behind that, no UAE, no Malaysia, no Singapore, who are in this top division. So it's a very different lineup, and hopefully we can see some of those other teams coming through and progressing in women's cricket in the future.
Let's move on to the Under-19 World Cup. Let's get to Afghanistan last, because they're the good story. Most of the other sides there had a pretty bad tournament, possibly Canada as the exception.
Yeah, although Scotland also had a decent tournament. Obviously they beat Papua New Guinea and gave India quite a fright in a very low scoring match. Scotland were bowled out for 88, but then had India at 22 for 5, although India then put on a partnership of 70 to run out the match. A brief bright spot for Scotland there, but Papua New Guinea were pretty terrible, got thrashed in every game. Namibia the same. Canada never really got comprehensively beaten. Lost by six wickets in Zimbabwe, 45 runs to South Africa, 63 runs to the West Indies, so never really got actually thrashed at any point. Relatively positive. They had a couple of players who have already played for the senior side, the captain by Nitish Kumar, of course, who's been playing for the senior side for about 6 years almost now, I think. He made his debut very young. The UAE, the hosts, didn't do well at all. You lost by 112 by 8 wickets and by 213 runs. So a pretty disappointing performance for the UAE. I was expecting something slightly better. They did beat England towards the end of the year, end of 2013, in an Under-19 match. So I was expecting them to maybe do a little bit better than they did, if not, perhaps not necessarily win a game, but certainly compete in one or two matches. So yeah, very disappointing for the UAE.
Canada was interesting. They had one of the highest fours for their runs in the tournament. They were third in the group, but they were quite close to that group. But the actual number of runs they conceded was quite high. So for an indication that bowling was what was leading them down there. Afghanistan obviously qualified for the quarterfinals by beating Australia. That really big result for them.
Yeah, huge. I think they were perhaps the best bet of an associate side getting through to the quarterfinals. I think people would expect them to have beaten Bangladesh and Namibia rather than Australia and Namibia. But yeah, very positive result for them. And to beat Australia by 36 runs, yeah, pretty impressive performance. Batting was a little bit top heavy, perhaps. I think once the top few got out, the middle order tended to struggle, except maybe in that match against Namibia. So maybe their middle order batsmen struggles against decent bowling. Playing in the quarterfinal against South Africa as we speak, so we won't know whether they've made a semi-final by the time this podcast goes out. It's got either way to make the quarterfinals is a very positive step and a good sign for the future for Afghanistan. It seems to be showing that it's not just a once in a generation performance for the current senior team.
It's certainly good to see the consistency of performance through their group stages. It's quite common for an associate team to get an upset win but then lose their other matches and miss out on net run rate, but in fact Afghanistan got through on net run rate because having beaten Australia they were quite close with Bangladesh and thrash Namibia to get through. So definitely have shown consistent performance and haven't done too badly in the quarterfinal to date in for about three quarters of the way through the game, although it looks like they're going to lose.
Yeah, yeah. All in all, a very good tournament for Afghanistan and hopefully they can keep producing these youth players. The under-16 team is currently struggling. I think they're in the second division in Asian regional tournaments, but maybe they can come on and perhaps do better in the future and produce more players for the senior team.
Ireland's been touring the West Indies. We mentioned this in our last podcast that they'd struggled in the first game of the domestic competition. That continued. They did get a consolation win against the Windward Islands, but it wasn't the best leading for them.
No. We've said before that they're often slow starters on tours, and this was no exception. And even in that game against the Windward Islands, you know, they were bowled out for less than 200. Only really two batsmen getting anything like a start. Niall O'Brien with 44 and Stuart Thompson with 32. Nobody else even made 20. And they were sort of reliant on the bowling of Dockrell and Poynter to get them out of a mess in the Windward Islands innings. And going on to the 2020 internationals, obviously a very good start with Ireland winning the first 2020 national by 6 wickets. Low scoring match. West Indies could only make 116 from their 20 overs. Very strong West Indies side as well. You know, Chris Gayle and Darren Bravo and Darren Sammy. Very strong side, which Ireland bowled very well against. You know, Cusack and O'Brien both took 2 for 17. Cusack from just 4 overs. Started badly in the run chase for Ireland. Porterfield and Sterling didn't make much, but Ed Joyce took the team home, unbeaten 40. And a very good performance in that first match. Then, of course, the cameras came in for the second match. Broadcast around the world with some quite awful commentary from the little I've heard and what I've read, but broadcast around the world nonetheless, and it looked like Ireland were going to have another upset when they kept them to 96 for 9. Alex Cusack again bowling really well, took 4 for 11, but the Irish batting just couldn't do the job.
Yeah, disappointing to get bowled out for 85 when your target's only 97, but I guess good for them that they've tied the 2020 series with the one international to come.
Well, of course, they didn't even get bowled out. They actually batted out the 20 overs and couldn't even make 97. So he only lost 8 wickets, so which is probably even worse than being bowled out.
I think one positive sign, though, for Ireland certainly is that if we were going to say there was a weakness in their squad coming into the World 2020, it was probably going to be the bowling, because you know at least the top order is fairly consistent. So to keep the West Indies to these gettable targets must give them a bit of confidence.
Yes, definitely. And the batting, of course, was also missing Niall O'Brien, who was injured for the two 2020 internationals. Obviously a very experienced batsman in 2020 cricket. He's played a lot in county cricket for Kent, Northamptonshire and now Leicestershire. So missing some experience there in the batting. But yeah, the bowling is a very positive sign. There was a lot of worry that now Ireland don't have Boyd Rankin and Trent Johnston, that they were going to start struggling with the bowling. And it's looking so far like they're not struggling.
Another tournament that was going on recently, Malaysia hosted Singapore and MCC squad in a triangular series and managed to come out on top, although they lost two of their four games, one to the MCC, one to Singapore in the group stage, but won the final.
Yeah, a positive sign for them. I think this is more about preparation for the World Cricket League Division 5 than anything else. And you know, a good performance from Malaysia to win the tournament. I'm not sure how strong the MCC side was. It included a couple of former county players. Mark Shilton, who was captain of Lancashire for quite a few years, was, I think, captain in the MCC side. And I think maybe a couple of other recent county professionals in there. And so, yeah, good to see these tournaments taking place as well. The MCC do good work in terms of global development, sending teams out to play teams like Singapore and Malaysia. I think they've got a few other teams touring around the world later this year. Good to see these tours still taking place, and good to see Singapore actually turn up for a match against Malaysia. They obviously missed the Sedara Cup just before Christmas.
The other big side in Associate Cricket, Afghanistan's getting their opportunity in a big tournament next week, the Asia Cup. They've been included as the fifth side. It's been talked down a little bit in some of the press that the Asia Cup is a very strange tournament. It's been shoveled in between the World 2020 and other tours that are ongoing around the world. It's the TV rights and the sponsorship are being sold for about 40% less on previous events. But for Afghanistan, I suspect it's something they're really looking forward to.
So Afghanistan obviously using it partly as preparation for the World 2020, although it is obviously 50 over cricket. It'll get them used to playing in Bangladeshi conditions and against some decent sides. Whether they can win a game remains to be seen. You'd think they'd be backing themselves to perhaps beat Bangladesh, would be their sort of main aim in the tournament. Aside from that, I think they're going to struggle to beat the top three sides. I'm sure they'll be taking inspiration though from the under-19s. Under-19s, of course, I didn't mention earlier, have actually beaten three full members in the last 2 months. So, hopefully Afghanistan can take some inspiration from that and perhaps pull off, if not one, then maybe two surprises in the tournament. But it'll be a hard tournament for them to play in. But I'm sure they hope they can, you know, with a TV audience that they've not perhaps had before, expose their cricketers to a wider audience. I know they were very disappointed that none of their players got picked up in the IPL auction. So hopefully a good performance on a high stage can help that happen again, help that happen in the future.
Yeah, with the Asia Cup, what's your feeling on this tournament? Obviously, it's maybe something we can talk about after as well, but is it something that has a future? Is it something that should have a future? The ACC obviously gets a lot of its funding from its ability to sell the TV rights to it, but on the same token, as we've seen for a lot of ICC tournaments, that means that the teams involved don't terribly care about it.
Yeah, I enjoy this tournament, especially, you know, the last two tournaments. It was disappointed that there was no associate involvement. Obviously, the previous tournaments, there always had been at least one associate involved. I'd like it to continue. I'd like more regional tournaments to be introduced. You know, you have an ODI status team now in four of the five ICC regions, at least one team. You could easily have other regional tournaments now, and it's sort of disappointing that they have, you know, all these sort of completely pointless 3 and 5 match series instead of regional tournaments. I think the general public would probably prefer to see some meaningful tournament play when it comes to one-day international cricket, rather than these endless series where teams will rest players and they don't seem to take it seriously. I think maybe a regional tournament probably would be taken a bit more seriously by the players. So I'd like to see actually more regional tournaments in the other regions as well. And the associate side in some cases are going to lose, but it will be good for experience.
Yeah, it certainly be. When we look at Papua New Guinea, obviously they now got their one-day status. It would be good to see them actually getting something out of their region. They're probably the most likely to get something out of the region. England obviously plays its regional counterparts, they just don't do so in a regional tournament. And what happens in Africa is a mystery to all of us, I think, most of the time. Let's talk about WCL5. We mentioned a second ago with Malaysia. It's in 2 weeks, which is scary for me because I'm supposed to be going and I haven't organised anything yet. Nigeria's started their preparation. They've been in camp apparently since the start of January and have a tour of Sri Lanka before the tournament gets going. So that's good preparation for them. But where do you see the other teams being at, particularly Jersey and Guernsey? They're obviously out of season.
Yeah, and Guernsey as well are missing Jeremy Frith, who's been their top player for a number of years now. So I'm not sure how well they're going to do. They've picked quite a young side for the trip. I know they've been doing a lot of indoor events at the moment. The weather hasn't been too good on Guernsey. They've not been able to play outdoors. Weather in this part of the world isn't particularly good in February at the moment. February ever, but especially at the moment, it's been pretty bad. So they've not really been able to do too much training, and Jersey's the same. Malaysia as hosts, coming off the back of this tri-series win against the MCC in Singapore, you've got to look towards them to do well in this tournament and get promoted to Division 4. Tanzania and the Cayman Islands haven't really played much recently, and it's so hard to pick the other promotion spot. I think Malaysia are definitely a shoe-in for promotion. The other promotion spot is hard to pick. I don't think Nigeria will be there. So, yeah, it could be any of Tanzania, the Caymans, Guernsey or Jersey. And it should be an interesting sort to see who gets that second promotion spot. If I had to pick something, I'd say it would be Guernsey. But, yeah, as I said, they're missing a couple of players and who knows what could happen. It should be a very interesting tournament.
Yeah, I think recent results probably might have slightly favoured Jersey over Guernsey as well. Although, when you say that, they're always incredibly close to the matches between those two teams. So, in fact, any match at this level has traditionally been something of a lottery. So, I can understand you not wanting to stick your neck out to pick anyone apart from the host. I guess the being on turf pitches is possibly going to be a factor as well. It might again favour the Channel Island teams.
Although Malaysia and Tanzania both have turf pitches and play on them quite regularly. So, even that's sort of hard to play. But Guernsey and Jersey probably do play on turf more, so that may give them a slight edge. But, as we've said, they're out of season, so that might negate that edge quite a bit.
Well, something to look forward to certainly soon. It'll be interesting to tournament. There's three of those WCL tournaments this year as well. The next one will be in June, and then the WCL3 apparently is going to be in November, I read today, although I haven't heard who's actually going to be hosting it.
So Division 3, the four teams already in it are Nepal, Uganda, USA and Bermuda. I can't see Bermuda hosting Division 3 again. USA, as we're going to go into in a moment, are in a good position to host tournaments. And November, they could host a tournament in November, but I don't think they will be doing. And so that leaves Nepal and Uganda. And as far as I'm aware, Nepal has more turf pitches than Uganda. And Nepal always gets a good crowd to these tournaments. So I think it will be hosted in Nepal, with Nepal hoping, obviously, to go straight back up to Division 2.
Let's move on to the news about the USA. It's possible they may not even be able to play in that tournament, depending on what happens with the ICC, the American Cricket Federation has made a request to examine the status of USACA as the sole governing body based on the fact that they're, as we've said on this show, I think a couple of times, that they have barely a third of the leagues affiliated with them these days.
Yeah, and they've recently, the biggest cricket league in the country, the I think it's the Commonwealth Cricket League in, based in New York, which has 60 teams in it, has now switched from USACA to the American Cricket Federation. So base of USACA is becoming ever narrower, and you'd almost argue now that they are no longer the governing body of cricket in the USA, and that it is the American Cricket Federation. It's got to that stage now. And like we say, American Cricket Federation have requested that the ICC look into governance. You have to look at the situation 2 years ago now of Switzerland, who also had two rival governing bodies and also requested that the ICC investigates it, and the result of that was that the ICC expelled, well, first suspended Switzerland and then expelled them. So I think this will probably be decided at the ICC annual meeting in July, and it'll be interesting to see what the outcome is. I think the USA could well find themselves facing a third suspension from international cricket, and as much as we don't want to see teams getting suspended, I think the USA are perhaps at the stage now where they do need to be suspended, and whether the American Cricket Federation take over or not, and take over as an associate member, or they might even end up having to start again from the bottom as an affiliate member, I think we're in a situation now where a change needs to happen in USA cricket. We have said this a number of times before, that a change needs to happen, but I think we're now in the situation where a change can take place that would be beneficial for US cricket. The American Cricket Federation seems to be doing everything right, and USACA seems to be doing everything wrong.
We'll get on to everything wrong in a second, because there's a bit going on there. I do want to make a point that with the Switzerland case, which obviously we spoke to Nick Pink about last year, that they weren't actually... The ICC never made a decision on that. They essentially told them, go away, come to us when you have a single governing body, and that'll be what happens. Now, that's obviously a big risk for US cricket, that they might end up in the wilderness for a considerable period of time if they end up with two governing bodies and they're not willing to negotiate, or they're not able to set the position.
Jamie Harrison has made it quite clear that a merger with USACA is completely off the table, and it's not even going to be taken into consideration.
Which comes back to the issues with USACA, which is that they're obviously extremely broke, and if they got suspended, it's almost impossible to see how they could be going concerned for more than possibly even a year or two at most, possibly less, because from the figures we saw that were released from their 2012 tax return, they spent, I think, double the income they got from the ICC on legal fees alone. They spent less than half what they got from the ICC on development-type operations. Their debt is completely out of control. The likely outcome, if we were looking into the future, is that the USACA will be suspended and then will disappear as an operation just for bankruptcy.
Yeah, the USACA currently get, I think it's about $330,000 from the ICC annually, and without that, you really can't see them surviving for even a year. If the outcome is expulsion or suspension at the annual meeting in 2014, I could well see USACA, by the time the annual meeting in 2015 comes around, be completely gone and not existing anymore, and then the American Cricket Federation can come in as perhaps an affiliate member and take over from there. But interesting times for US cricket, but then it always is.
It is always there. I think the subject of our second show, and they'll continue to come up at least until this is resolved. And I think obviously they're such a big country and have so many cricketers there, and they really should be one of the biggest associate members. We should be expecting to talk about them often and in more positive light, not in as a basket case.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And you go back 10 years, and they were one of the top associate members. They were, you know, they played in the Champions Trophy. They were ranked 12th in the world, and now they're nowhere near. And they could find themselves, if they get suspended, being ranked, you know, 106th in the world. So to go from 12th to 106th in the world in 10 years, that's not a good sign.
And that's all I have, Andrew. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, as always.